for listening to federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin. I'm Jared Serbu filling in this week. Budget cuts, agency consolidations, and an emphasis on streamlining. A lot of changes in store for the State Department. Recently, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson completed a survey to which tens of thousands of state employees responded. For reaction, Federal Drive host Tom Temin spoke with Barbara Stevenson, a career diplomat and president of the American Foreign Service Association. In part one of the interview, Stevenson describes some of the findings from the Tillerson survey and a new employment policy that's not going down too well.
First of all, Tom, I mean, a really wide participation rate. A lot of people took the secretary up on the invitation to be surveyed. I was surveyed as well as interviewed. So I think a lot of interest in the survey, a really high rate of participation.
That's right.
Earlier, of quibbles about the survey, as you would imagine with a group like the Foreign Service. We're like that. But I will also say that broadly, Insignium found many of the same things that we in the Foreign Service Association found when we've been doing listening tours with our members. And I'm very happy to go over really some of those similarities if you'd like.
Yeah, what did you find? Because I felt that a lot of the issues raised were not brand new as a result of, say, the Trump administration or anything that topical.
So you're right. So Insignium got, at the top, they talked about some things that are just bedrock to the Foreign Service, immense commitment to the mission and pride in representing America. And they capture that, I think, beautifully. And also the degree to which members of the Foreign Service at state and aid and other foreign affairs agencies are inspired by their colleagues, by the caliber of their colleagues and their commitment. We find this regularly. And also a quiet kind of gratitude that when we serve overseas, so much of the rest of the world looks to us for leadership. They come to us and say, what do you think? How would you approach this problem? Do you think you could help us solve this problem by maybe convening the right stakeholders and setting the agenda? And that's a key part of what we do. And Insignium, I think, really did ferret that out and articulate it well. On the downside, I think Insignium found the same thing we find, which is immense frustration with gummed up, cumbersome bureaucratic processes and labor-intensive workarounds. Members of the Foreign Service love their jobs and they actually want to do them. So they want these processes to be fixed and made more streamlined so that they can actually spend more of their time doing jobs that they love and that they know are vitally important. We often tell our members that their job is they are the pillars of the American global leadership that 9 in 10 Americans say they want. And our members say, yeah, then spare me spending 4 hours a day babysitting both broken processes and IT platforms and other kinds of taskings that, sound like window one, window two, window three. Please help me get my job, get back to doing my job. That's the number one frustration members expressed to us. Insignium captured that really, really well.
Now, these results have been out for a couple of weeks. Have you heard any more from leadership on what they might do about them?
So they've formed working groups. We knew they were in the works, but they've got the leaders of those in place. So they do look at things like HR processes and the IT platforms and foreign assistance and overseas presence. So there is a working group process that's been established, and I remained deeply hopeful that we will come out of this reorganization process. As I told you last time we talked, Tom, I see this as a rare opportunity to streamline and get rid of some of these workarounds and return time to task so that we're a more efficient operation. So that's where the work stream has headed. And it was also announced that Deloitte, which has a long experience helping the State Department streamline processes and make them work better, that they're actually part of the team. So I see that as a hopeful sign as well.
You mentioned earlier that you were one of the people that they questioned in person as part of the survey, this Insignium company, which conducted this for state. And what was that like? Who did the questioning? And what kinds of things did they want to get from you?
Well, I had the honor of actually being interviewed by the founding director, or there's a title for this, of Insignium. And it was a very insightful interview. Trying to get at the mission and how we articulate the mission and where does the real work of diplomacy happen. And I think an understanding that the real magic happens in the field, in the 270 embassies and consulates that we maintain around the world. And this is where we interface with the rest of the world in their language, understanding their context. that's where the magic happens. I know one analogy was like retail. It really all happens in the store. And so what the job of headquarters is to do is to provide store support. You can chuckle about that, but I have to tell you, in many ways, it's a very fair analogy, is that a large part of what you're looking. Headquarters needs to be involved in the Washington policymaking process, but it also needs to be vitally involved in making it possible for the diplomatic tooth to get out there in the field and really work the magic that we were sent to do.
We're speaking with Barbara Stephenson, a career diplomat and president of the American Foreign Service Association. And what's your sense of the overall reaction to your colleague, by your colleagues and other people in State Department, to the publishing of these kinds of survey results?
So there's an unsettled feeling, Tom. I'd love to say otherwise, but you can't really talk about cuts of this magnitude without, and Insignium recognizes this in the report, without creating a really unsettled feeling. I'm out teaching a lot this summer at our Foreign Service Institute and also hearing from members in structured conversations. And the first thing that comes up is people are on board on making us a leaner, more efficient, more cost-effective tool of foreign policy, because we really believe in the mission. But there's some parts of the way that this are being done that have caused such people to be so unsettled, and they seem to be so ill-advised that it's shaking confidence in the whole thing. One is a kind of an obscure point, which is the Foreign Service, like the U.S. military, rotates from post to post every 2 to 3 years. So a family that's serving right now in Abuja, Nigeria, will have gotten orders to say, okay, now you're going to Addis Ababa. You pack up your family and you go to Addis Ababa. So we do this every summer. One-third to a half of the Foreign Service just moves around the world. Some of us come back to Washington, but two-thirds of us are overseas. This summer, when all those families leave, my husband, for example, when I was overseas, he was our community liaison officer. Got a couple of master's degrees. He was cheap and highly skilled labor, and he served at that at my first two posts. So this is how we staff embassies. We use the family members as a very inexpensive way to get important jobs done. For reasons that members are struggling with, this summer, when one-third to a half of us transfer, those spouses that go with us will leave their jobs behind, leave a vacancy, and all be unable to take up positions at their new posts. So this is actually the number one thing on people's minds when I go out, is how in the world am I supposed to maintain critical post operations with a 35% cut in this part of my workforce? So there are pieces that are so overshadowing, I think, what's in the Insignium report, that people are just spending most of their time trying to figure out, how in the world do I keep my visa operation functioning without all those, they're called eligible family members. And so that's actually what's most on people's minds, to be completely honest. It is the burning, crushing issue, is how do we maintain critical post operations while this ban on replacing people after the summer rotation remains in effect.
So to be clear,
it's not strategic. It's the opposite of strategic.
Yeah, to be clear, before now, your spouse, a spouse, could go with the diplomat and get a job in the post, helping keeping things running. And now
right. That
there's a ban on spouses doing that?
Yes.
Okay.
When you move, you lose your job. So I will be clear, certainly by no means all spouses were able to work. Way more spouses wish to work than are able to. This is just one of the hardest things that we wrestle with, is the Foreign Service's highly qualified spouses who want to contribute and can't do so. So it was by no means true that all spouses had jobs, but it was definitely true that embassies and consulates relied heavily on that available pool of labor to get jobs done. Our working estimate is you could hire 3 eligible family members for the cost of moving 1 Foreign Service officer to post. So when you have tight budgets, you get work done with the eligible family members. Now, the eligible family members, when they move, with limited exceptions, very limited exceptions, can't take up those jobs. So it's really creating just a level of concern that is trumping almost everything else.
And that's a policy that has been imposed since Rex Tillerson came in.
Yes.
And there's some other issues with state that are bandied about. They haven't happened yet necessarily. One is the merging of U.S. Agency for International Development with state. They've been sister agencies, you might say, one big sister, one little sister, but not really merged. What's the feeling about that one?
that's also a cause. There's some people are focusing on thinking about that. Now, our position at the American Foreign Service Association is that we definitely favor closer collaboration between state and the U.S. Agency for International Development. We all know from serving side by side with each other out in the field that we produce the best results when we're closely integrated, working off of one integrated country strategy. I cut my teeth in the field in El Salvador, working with a highly talented democracy and governance officer at AID. She was like my, you know, we were almost attached at the hip. And we brought democratic elections into El Salvador, working together and paved the way for a peace agreement. So we make amazing things happen when we work together like that. The question, though, of whether the upheaval of the consolidation, we've seen the letter from, I think it's 58 of our most kind of seasoned diplomats and development experts and national security experts saying, don't do this.
Interesting. And on the national security front that you mentioned, there's also some discussion of moving consular affairs, population, refugees, and migration over to the Homeland Security Department.
That one is also one that has really gotten people's attention. Now, on that, I want to start off by saying that the Secretary's spokeswoman, Heather Nauert, immediately came out and told Josh Rogan at the Washington Post that Secretary Tillerson believes that consular affairs and the Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration should remain at state, and that he, Secretary Tillerson, views consular and refugee work, and this is a quote, as essential to the department's mission to secure our borders and protect the American people. So I think people took some reassurance that the Secretary spoke about that right up front. Here's the thing. I don't see how you do better than having the Foreign Service play the role that we play. Many agencies are involved in the question of which legally documented aliens are admitted to the United States. So the Foreign Service role is to actually stand there at the visa window talking to, say, if I'm posted in Bogota, Colombia, I speak to the Colombians who have decided they want to come to the United States, and I look at their purpose, and I read the Immigration and Naturalization Act, so the laws Congress passed, and then I interview them in Spanish to understand whether they qualify for a visa in one of the categories Congress has approved, and I know how Colombia works, and I understand what Bogota looks like, so I have a good ability to understand what I'm being told in the context and to make a decision about which Colombians get a visa in their passport so they can then get on an airplane, fly to the United States, and apply at the border to DHS for permission to enter. Our real core strength in the Foreign Service is language ability and mastering what's going on in that local context. I have a hard time imagining anybody better than us to actually be at the window making that decision.
So if that office were to move to Homeland Security, do you think that the State Department qualities that it now has would erode over time as it became Homeland Security?
Well, I don't know that I think our ability, our language ability, and our area expertise would erode. It's such a core strength of the department. Although that said, I will say my foreign language skills have almost never been better than when they were when I was standing on the visa line interviewing people in either Spanish or Dutch. I mean, there's something about doing that for the whole workday that really drives your language skills way, way up. What I think is that it's just hard for me to imagine a better workforce than the Foreign Service to actually understand what the foreigner that's applying to come to the United States, what they're saying, what their intent is, and, you know, where they come from and the circumstances. I mean, to be able to read the whole package at the window and decide, yes, you've passed this step, I think we're the best people for it. Always also, Tom, is when we do these changes, it tends to cause disruption and long lines because while we're trying to change over, you know, reorganization has an impact. It's really important that we keep wait times for visas short. We should never underestimate the economic impact of people who visit our country, whether if they come for students, it's a major contribution to those universities. But as you can probably hear from my southern accent, I actually hail from the South. I'm from Florida. And my state depends on consulates and embassies issuing these visas to qualified people in a timely fashion. Those people then travel to my home state of Florida. They rent cars, they stay in hotels,
sure.
They buy tickets to Disney World. It's the engine for for employment in where I come from, it's also absolutely vital to my state's budget. We can't afford long wait times through a big disruption. So the process I just described of not backfilling those family members plus a reorganization, I think I've already talked to people from travel and tourism associations who are very worried that wait times are going to stack up here and it's going to have a big impact on that industry and on our economic prosperity.
Sounds like Secretary Tillerson has been listening to you. We're speaking with Barbara Stevenson, president of the American Foreign Service Association. And also there have been news reports about the shuttering of the State Department War Crimes Office. And how's that going down with your peers?
So on this one, Tom, in general, our members tell us what they told Insignium, which is that paring back of all these special envoys would be a good thing. So rather than kind of going special envoy by special envoy, what I will tell you is that there's a strong consensus among our members. Insignium found it. The American Academy of Diplomacy found this, is that it's time to pare back all of these special envoys that have proliferated. The numbers in the 50s, the 60s, or I think Senator Corker mentioned a number on Monday in the 70s. This happens from time to time that we need to do some streamlining and paring back. When Colin Powell was Secretary of State, he dramatically cut back the number of envoys. We generally all agree that as part of streamlining and returning us to core diplomatic capability, it's time to take a really good look at the proliferation of all these special envoys and pare them back. What we want is some strategic clarity so that we know what we're doing and that this is the top priority. Tell us what you want us to do. You want us to counter ISIS? We are ready to develop a plan, get it approved, and deploy. Do you want us to staunch the flow of migrants to our southern border? Good. Give us that as a priority and let us develop a plan and deploy. But don't give us 75 things because it's cluttered and it's hard to follow that. So we welcome a thoughtful effort to declutter all of this.
And in the vision that you have for state that is more efficient, that has fewer envoys, keep some of the vital missions that you've talked about, can it be done with the budget proposal that is now before Congress from the Trump administration?
That is a great question. I do know that a budget was built based on that very low, you know, the number that had a 30% cut. And I want to really applaud my career colleagues because every bureau in the department right now is headed by, I think all of them are headed by a career member of the service. So people did a great job prioritizing and presenting budgets that met that number. So hats off to my colleagues first. But second, I would say, you know, I just don't think I've ever heard Republican members of Congress be quite so clear that they, I mean, Senator Corker called the budget proposal with 30% cuts a complete waste of time, and that's what he said in the hearing. Lindsey Graham has been, Senator Graham from South Carolina, the head of the Appropriations Committee, has been crystal clear that nothing like this is going to pass. So I congratulate my colleagues for doing a very thoughtful look at prioritizing and producing a budget that would have worked with in those cuts. We would have lost things we cared deeply about, but there we are. But I also hear loud and clear from both sides of the aisle on the Hill that they have no intention of passing cuts this deep. So there we are.